Aloha. Welcome to the Travel Angel Radio Show. I am very thrilled. We got a special show for you today. I've got a wonderful woman in the studio here, and I'm going to be talking to Sarah Betcher about Alaska, Northwest Alaska, and a TV series. Actually, it's a film series, and some of it's showing on Akaku on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Also, Kathy Takushi will be joining me in just a bit. And I've got Rudy Maxa, who's just marvelous. I love Rudy. World-renowned journalist and host of his own radio show, will be calling in and talking about what's going on with some of these travel restrictions. It's very confusing, and he's on top of it. And he just got back from Moscow as well, so we'll be talking about his trip to Moscow. Right now, I just want to say aloha to Sarah. So nice to have you in the studio from Alaska.
Thank you. Yes, aloha.
And you were here for, you came to Maui about when?
I arrived to Maui early November.
Oh, you've been here a while.
Yeah, I've been here several months. And over the years, I've been coming to Maui a couple months a year. And this year, I ended up staying quite a while. But what I'm able to do is work on my editing from Hawaii, which is great. I do a lot of filming in the spring and the summer, typically. And then I can kind of travel with my work.
You know, that's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
You get to be in the wild of Alaska and then be when it's cold and there's no sun. You come to sunny Maui for the winter. I think that's perfect. You and the whales, right?
Yes, I follow the whales. Exactly.
Well, it's so cute. You got a picture of you here that Akaku sent out. And you're on this really cold looking. I don't know, it looks like a glacier or some kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of people on Maui like going to Alaska. I've been there three times, and Northwest Passage cruise, and then I've driven around and stuff some. But, I mean, Alaska's so big and beautiful that we can't begin to even understand it all. But you were in a part that a lot of people don't travel to, Northwest Alaska. Most people don't get up there, do they?
No, they don't. There's virtually no tourism in that region of Alaska. In fact, the villages that I frequently go to have no hotels, and many of them have no restaurants and one very tiny little store. The only outsiders you see are teachers, you know, who may be there a year or so, or researchers, and so you have to sleep at the school. That's
seriously,
in many cases, that's the only
place
to stay.
They let you sleep at a school. At
yeah.
The school.
Yeah.
That, how did you land up wandering up there?
Well, so my background, I worked as a naturalist in Alaska and still do for many years, and I decided to get my master's degree at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I chose that university because I was able to study ethnobotany, traditional uses of plants. It was something that was interesting to me for many years and something I talked about a lot when I was a wilderness guide.
And oh, you were a wilderness guide. How exciting is that?
Yeah, for many
based
years.
Based out of where?
Well, different areas. The longest stint of time was in Glacier Bay National Park.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, 6 years in that
How
park.
Amazing that is.
Yeah.
Did you have to get special certification to be a wilderness guide?
Not certification, but so for a couple of those years, I was a wilderness guide off of tour vessels. And So I'd take people out kayaking for about 8 hours a day. One of the boats is a little bit shorter.
Uh-huh. So the boats would come into town, you'd meet them and then take them out.
A lot of the ships, the passengers are on board for a week.
Oh.
And both of the two ships that I first worked on, we were in the park all week long. And,
wow.
You know, it's one of the most wild places on the planet. Over 3 million acres of wild land and, you know, lots of bears and moose and whales and seals.
Oh, were you
glaciers.
Born in Alaska?
No, I was raised in Seattle, Washington. Oh. And lived there till I was about 18.
And then you wandered up?
Yeah. Eventually.
And just fell in love with the wildlife and the open nature and everything?
Yeah. What I had heard about Alaska sounded like a dream come true. So when I first got a job offered to work on a ship as a naturalist.
Because you already had your degree.
I had my undergraduate degree, and I had had maybe 1 year of experience as a wilderness guide in Montana. I spent a summer there. So I was hooked my first summer. I just thought there's no there can't be a more beautiful wild place on the planet. So
I totally agree. So for those listening, a lot of people love doing interesting travels. And a lot of them have already done the Inside Passage or have done the, you know, I call them here, say poo-poos. When you do a cruise, you're getting a little bit of an overview of what you like. But a lot of people like to go back and do more things. Now, tell me a little more, because some people might be very interested in exploring and going to Glacier Park. How do you set something like that up? And tell us about the boats that you think are good for people to go on in Glacier Park.
Yeah, it's tricky to plan your own itinerary in Alaska. It's very, very challenging.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't always recommend it unless people are dedicated to the time it's going to take to plan such a trip. But if someone wants a more wild experience and not just where the large cruise ships stop and do the shopping and stuff like that,
right.
They could look into flying first to Juneau, Alaska, and that's where I'm based out of, the capital in southeast, and then taking a small plane over to Gustavus, the town outside of Glacier Bay National Park. And there's a lodge there people can stay at.
There's
a nice campground. And then you can take a day boat into the park and see the glaciers. You can do a guided kayak trip or rent kayaks and go up there on your own. You have to be an experienced sea kayaker to do that, being in such a wild land. But, I highly recommend it. I mean, it's one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities.
It sounds fabulous. Yeah. It really does. What do you do to prepare for a trip like that? I mean, people from Maui here, you know, we don't have a lot of experience in the cold weather. So if you are going to do a trip like that, you know, it's cold most of the year, but of course most people want to go in, what, May, June, July, and August? Is that in the meantime? Or?
Yeah, what a lot of people don't realize is that the sunniest months of the year in Southeast Alaska are April and May.
I had no idea.
Yeah, no idea, because it is colder.
Yeah.
However, there's more sunshine.
Interesting.
During those months.
Huh.
So that's nice. And it is a rainforest. It's the largest temperate rainforest in the world. So we get a lot of rain.
Yeah.
If you want to kind of be out of the rain where there's more sun, those are good months. And then later in the year, there's maybe some more rain, but it's warmer. So in June,
wonderful.
July, August.
How exciting.
Yeah.
So how did you get into filmmaking?
Yeah, so I got my degree at University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I thought, you know, my intent was to study more about ethnobotany, traditional uses of plants, and then originally I thought I'd want to write a book based around the traditions in Glacier Bay. But about 6 months into my degree, I realized that if I was going to do anything to contribute to preserving indigenous knowledge, the best thing for me to do was to choose a medium that's the closest to how we have traditionally learned, and that's orally and visually. And so film seemed to be the best match for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the opportunity to sit by an elder and to watch them, you know, prepare a dish with wild foods, the second best thing is to watch it on a film.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted the film curator at the museum at my university, and I told him my idea. And, you know, I had no background in filmmaking, but I was very enthusiastic that this is what I was meant to do in the world. And so he agreed to do an independent study with me. And we sat together a couple hours a week and chatted about how he had been making documentary films about indigenous people in Alaska.
Now, you didn't have cameras, you didn't have microphones, you didn't have any of that kind of stuff.
No, a lot of it was borrowing and getting the best thing I could for a tiny budget. So I taught myself all the camera skills kind of on the fly, in the field, in the village.
Wow. And, you know, it's not like you can stop into the local, well, now they don't have Radio Shacks, but you have to make sure you have your batteries and all your stuff and your equipment and backup for all of that as well when you're going out into the wild, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the villages have usually one small store, so you might be able to get AAA or AA batteries, but you can't get camera batteries. No way.
Or film.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't even use film anymore.
Well, but SD cards, but they probably don't even have that. And
no.
So, yeah, you can't forget anything. And it's nice to have backups in case something breaks.
Absolutely. And with cold weather you're dealing with, so equipment can act different in the very cold weather.
Yeah, batteries die very quickly.
Do they? Is that it?
In the cold.
I hadn't thought of that. Wow.
So that picture that you have of me, that's actually me standing on the sea ice several miles out of Nome, Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first day on the sea ice.
And so did you land up still? When you were doing this documentary, by then you had your own camera?
I did purchase a camera, and actually I started by using a pretty inexpensive Sony.
Well, I think I might have Rudy Maxa calling in a little early. I just double check here. Aloha. Is this Rudy? No, that's not. I think we got the wrong. Sorry about that. Sorry to interrupt you there. And
oh, that's
so
fine.
You started out with that. And you know, I'm just so impressed. You're young. You just really have this belief that you can do what you want. And not only that, you did it. You know, I mean, that's what I'm getting from your story, Sarah, is you just went for this very bold thing and your adventure was captured on this, and you were able to probably get some amazing footage. You get some great wildlife. Wildlife's not easy to shoot, by the way. You got to get, I mean, you don't have a super long lens on some of these cameras, right?
No, and I really had bottom-of-the-line equipment to start with. I had a cheap Sony camera, and it was just me. I didn't have any technical support team. You know, it's just me going around, and I was literally out there for months, just kind of thrown out there. I was under a NOAA grant. NOAA, to make a film about how weather and climate.
And good for you to get a grant.
It was, yeah, I was lucky. I, my first several grants, I was just sort of written into them. I didn't have to apply for the money. So I've been funded by NOAA, the National Science Foundation many times, the National Park Service. I've been very lucky.
I think you're an inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
No, I really do, because, you know, so many people say, how do I do this? It seems overwhelming if you think about it. Traveling wise, most people probably would never get to Northwest. What's the closest place that any visitor, and even then you'd want a guide or something? It's pretty wild out there. Are there any places tourists can visit up there?
Yeah, so many people have heard of Nome, Alaska, mm-hmm. and it's just south of where I've primarily done a lot of my film work. And Nome, Alaska is set up for tourism. They do have hotels, they do have restaurants, and they have roads going out. And so that's a nice place for people to visit. And actually, they had their very first cruise ship last summer. So that
into
was a
Nome.
Big deal. They
I
did.
Bet it was, this small little town with thousands of people coming off. I'm sure it wasn't a big, big cruise ship, was it?
It wasn't a massive cruise ship, but the whole town prepared for it. The museum prepared for it.
And they were really excited that
they were very excited, yeah, because that brings in some revenue. The thing with a lot of the villages in Alaska is that they don't have a way to make a lot of money. They don't have industry that brings in tourism, and they don't have a lot of jobs. And so if they are able to get a little bit of tourism, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely it would. And yes. Truthfully, some of those other towns are so overwhelmed by all the cruise ships coming in, it's nice to see it being spread around.
Yeah.
Because you see some of these other small towns with like three big boats in there, and it's like all of a sudden they're overwhelmed. So it's kind of nice to see it. Other small villages and towns get that, you know,
yeah,
that
and
business.
I think especially, you know, there's a lot of small tour vessels in Alaska which are different than the cruise ships. So a small tour vessel might have 50 to 100 people on them,
mm-hmm.
and those have a lot less impact on the community, and you can have a more intimate experience with a village if there's a small group. Maybe a dance troupe prepares a dance performance just for those people, or a cookout and does a cultural presentation, things like that.
And people like hikes that are guided.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Well, you're a wealth of information, Sarah. You really are. People can see your series on Akaku on Sunday nights at 8 o'clock. And if they wanted to contact you or go to a website, what information do they have so they can find out more about you?
Yeah, so luckily, all of my films so far have been nonprofit films, and they're free and available on the internet. And the easiest way to find them is on my website, which is farthestnorthfilms.com.
What a great name.
farthestnorthfilms.com. Yeah, and so if you look at the tab for films, most of my published films are on there. You could look on YouTube, but a lot of my clients prefer that my films go on their YouTube channel. So again, the best way to see my films is just straight on my website, and I've embedded those YouTube videos on there.
That is so wonderful. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I really find it very inspiring talking to you and what you're doing. You've seen Alaska like most people never ever will see Alaska. And you probably should do tours as well, because I bet a lot of people would like to book tours with you and to go and see Alaska.
I thought about starting to do, you know, maybe a couple guided trips a year.
You should. You really should. People would love it.
Experience doing that.
I'd really think about that, Sarah.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I'd love to expand and start doing similar films here in Hawaii. So just the other day, I purchased another business name, Wisdom Keeper Media. So Eventually I'll have a website for that so that I can make films about indigenous cultures anywhere in the world.
Wonderful.
But certainly my specialty at this point is Alaska. So.
Well, and you're a wealth of information about it. It sounds really exciting.
You.
Well, we'll have to have you back next time you come and you return from Alaska, okay?
Oh, thank you.
Enjoy your summer up there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.
And I've got Kathy Takushi joining me now. A big aloha, Kathy. How are you doing?
I'm good, Cindy.
Good. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
We've got Rudy Maxa calling in just a few seconds. I'm very excited because Rudy's, I love Rudy. He's been doing it for years and years and years. He's done lots of TV on PBS and lots of series. On top of that, you know, he's gotten major awards for journalism, and he has his radio show, which he does. His radio show airs here on Sundays. And so he just got back from Moscow. And he's going to be giving us a ring shortly. And you and I, we've been talking a lot about what's going on, but this was great talking to Sarah. She has been doing this Alaska for a long time. She just started out as a botanist, and then she got into touring and going to all these places and started just from nothing and doing films there and seeing parts of Alaska we've never seen before. So the Paul Gauguin cruise, we had a lovely lady call the station after we did our show last week and said, I was listening to the show and heard about the Paul Gauguin cruise. I think her name was named Diane Campbell. And but anyway, she said it sounded so interesting. And indeed, I booked one. We thought it was full for October 28th, but I was able to get a stateroom. And I know there's some people listening that kind of are interested about that. So while we're waiting for Rudy Maxa to call, maybe you can say what deals are left, because people are very curious about this Paul Gauguin deal, because it is a great deal, especially if you're getting the balcony's a little bit more, but you can get a room with a window or a porthole, right?
The portholes start at, I think, $15.95 per person, and then it goes up window to like $21.95 and balconies like $25.95 per person. October 28th is sold out. I think there was another date that was sold out, but I think September 30th was also sold out. So
people, listen what you're saying here. Things are selling out rather quickly. You have November open, you think?
November was open last week.
So I
would, you know, if you want to go, don't wait, because they are filling up.
And that's the truth, folks. I mean, I waited to the last, and I couldn't believe when I finally, because I was thinking about it and thinking, and as everyone does, we procrastinate, we think about it. And then all of a sudden, when I decided I wanted to do it, it was like, oh, wait a second. All the rooms are taken that you want. It's like, oh, no, no, the rooms I'm taking. And so we never want, I'm sure you never want to tell people that, you know. And it was very, very kind of you to find me a balcony. But I'm excited about going, because right now, by the way, and this is a part of the factor of the Paul Gauguin cruise, Hawaiian Airlines is the only airline that flies down there to Tahiti. And the price last week was like $1,100 or something really reasonable.
Yeah, that's about the average, $1,100. I've seen it go up to $1,718.
I have paid $1,700 before, because they can raise the prices, because they know that everyone, it's based on availability. Mm-hmm. And if they have a pretty full flight, and
the higher the price goes.
Yes, absolutely. So this is super important for people to keep in mind, is that, like, okay, you got a good deal on the airfare. It may be a little bit more expensive than it was a year or two ago for the balcony, but you're going to make up the difference. And I had to remember that myself. It was when I went last time, the balcony, I think, was $2,100 or something.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit higher this year.
It's a little bit higher, but I made up the difference on the airfare. So you have to look at the overall thing. And the other thing to think about on Paul Gauguin is you have your alcohol and it's good alcohol. It's not just wine and beer. You have all your alcohol included.
Spirits.
Yeah.
Not the super top shelf, but good spirits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's a nice package that normally would go for hundreds of dollars on most cruise lines.
Mm-hmm,
and on top of that, the tips are included.
Yeah.
And that's usually about a couple hundred dollars.
Per person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
So you really are saving a lot on this cruise. Mm-hmm. And not only that, it's the Paul Gauguin ship itself is amazing. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Service is excellent, too.
Yeah, and the quality crew. Of the sheets mm-hmm. and the rooms and the wood, it's not a plastic, feeling. Some cruise lines feel kind of more like they're made out of plastic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This one feels like it's made out of top quality woods and designs. There's some, I think there's actually some Paul Gauguin paintings on the walls, some original paintings.
I don't remember.
I think there was a couple sketches or something.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the lovely entertainment that you have. The theater is very different from like a theater you'd find in Celebrity, but it's like a personal theater with seats where you're sitting in your own seat. It's an actual chair, mm-hmm. and they serve you your alcohol at your seat while you're there, watching the local entertainment or hearing a lecture from some wonderful people who lead the tours there mm-hmm. as well. So,
and they bring in the mamas and the papas to teach you the lei making. So that's fun as well. I also wanted to point out, since many of us have a Hawaiian Air credit card, the sooner you book, you can possibly use your miles to go free down to Tahiti. So I've had a few clients that had enough miles. So if you can get free
airfare. Explain how that works.
Well, if you have mileage, it on average, it's about 55,000 miles round trip. For a free ticket to Tahiti.
That's
so
not
I've
bad.
Had a few clients that were able to use their miles to go there, and then you just pay for the cruise. So
that's very nice.
Yeah. So if you have enough miles, the sooner you book, the better the chances that you are able to get the free seats.
Now, are most people booking the 7 nights or again? I know so we have many people who've done this before and they're doing a Hanaho.
Yeah, right now they just recently added a 10-night and an 11-night in December, but so far it's more 7 nights, and they also have some 7 nights up until February of next year.
Okay, and then that's the same deal.
Yeah, same deal.
And then it's over?
Well, they usually will come out. My guess is they won't have new dates until probably October, November.
Mm-hmm.
They give it to us Hawaii residents for sailings that they need help with. So I guess they have to look at how sales are going. If it's not going so good, then
well, it was funny.
We fill it up.
It was funny because Diane, who had called, said, I heard you talk about it on the air, and then I went to the website, and it wasn't the same price. And I said, that's right. And we have to explain to people about that, because I understand. I mean, we think about a deal, and we think we could go there, and we can book it ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
But can you explain how that doesn't work and why that doesn't work?
Well, they don't put it on their website, because obviously we're getting a special deal that nobody else gets. So mm-hmm. If they put it on their website for other consumers, because I compared the 7-night when I did it about 4 years ago, what we paid as a Hawaii resident towards the regular price, that was about $10,000. So they don't want to tell the other people that. So.
Yeah. And but it's also interesting that so many people from Hawaii like to go on this cruise. Of course, Maui, yes, too, but when you go over, you have to fly to Oahu to mm-hmm. go on the cruise from Hawaiian Airlines there. And I was really surprised how many people from Hawaii feel like going to Tahiti. I can't believe I just watched Moana last night for the first time.
Oh,
it was on Netflix.
Is that cute?
And you seen it, right? And it gave me that feel. I didn't realize it tied in Tahiti so much because
mm-hmm.
I heard it was about Maui. Maui was in there, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was lovely. And there is, of course, that connection between the Hawaiian Islands and Tahiti.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I mean, you got to understand that this, for some of the people, in fact, we met a couple when we went down that had actually listened to the radio show and had booked it. But they wanted, she was Hawaiian, and she wanted to see her roots, her Tahitian mm-hmm. roots. So that's an aspect of it that really shouldn't be overlooked either, because there is this connection. But it's very interesting. There's the roots there. And it's funny because we just talked about the Ancestry.com in our last show. We were talking about roots and DNA. But it's interesting to see the difference still, because me, having lived in Hawaii for 28 years, I've only known the Hawaiian kind of feel of the dance, the hula, the talk. And when you go to Tahiti, you're immersed in the French aspect of it and a different style of hula and music. You know, there's definitely, you can hear the similarities,
mm-hmm.
but there's a difference that you pick up that really expands your whole feeling of what's going on with this island culture.
Mm-hmm. And it's really relaxing too. You know, when you go there, when I went, I was like, I went because a lot of my clients were going, they said it's like the best trip ever. And I thought, well, I need to go and check it out. But it really is. I mean, once you get there, you just kind of let go and relax. And you don't have all the tons of shore excursions that you got to do because you want to see this and this. And so you come back, relax.
That is really one of the key mm-hmm. factors why, and it sounds strange, but I know exactly what you're saying because I've done those cruises. And mm-hmm. it's really, you're really, number one, a lot of us like to go on the cruises to Europe and, mm-hmm. Going to one in August. But to just get over there is a lot. I mean, to really get over there takes all this time, and you're kind of tired, and then you are running around a lot. Strangely mm-hmm. enough, you are, because you're seeing a lot of places and you feel like you want to see things, and so it's kind of busy, and then you get the long trip back. And really, a lot of times people are shocked that they come back and they don't feel like they've
chilled. Had a vacation.
Yeah, no, really.
need a vacation.
Exactly. But when mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is a way to just relax. Don't even have to do a shore excursion that's paid. You literally can get off and walk around the mm-hmm. island and figure a way out. I mean, I did the ones that went on the jeeps up in the back roads and things.
Yeah, I did that too. Mm-hmm.
And they weren't that expensive, those.
No, they start about $49 on up. I did that on the Jeep one mm-hmm. in Bora Bora, but in Raiatea, which they don't stop in Raiatea. I think you and I went to Raiatea. We did this lay truck thing, which kind of went around the island. And the guide totally reminded me of Kaylee E. Rochelle.
That's so funny. Maybe that's his side job.
Yeah. But anyways, but you learn about the history and like Raiatea, that's where they say the Hawaiian people came from that particular island.
Yeah.
And
don't forget Papeete, because you are there. And it's funny because when you land, you get off the plane and you're kind enough with Captivating Journeys to provide people transport mm-hmm. to the ship, which isn't that far. I mean, it's 15 minutes away.
But it's expensive if you took a taxi.
It's expensive, yes. Here's the clue, folks. Tahiti and Papeete especially is a very, very expensive place. And that's why this is also such a great deal, because if you start checking on hotels and other things and food even, I learned my lesson when I was standing at the airport on Oahu and I saw all these people from Tahiti. I could tell they were from Tahiti because they looked Hawaiian, but they were speaking French. And they had boxloads of stuff. And they all have boxloads of stuff. I'm going, what's that about? And someone said, it's so expensive in Papeete that people come to Hawaii and Oahu and to go shopping at Costco's and the stores and do their shopping there and then bring stuff back for families and friends, just like we do
mm-hmm.
when,
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but we do it the other way. We go shopping in other places and
bring it back. Yeah.
So that's, yes, it is expensive, and that makes the Paul Gauguin cruise so much more valuable, because you don't have to spend a night in a hotel room. You're just there, and the only day you might is the day, if you're doing the 7-day one, you might, I'm considering doing, there was a good deal Paul Gauguin offered for $400 where you could have the Intercontinental and your transfer to the airport as well.
The ship to the hotel and the hotel to the airport.
Yeah, which saves, and that would at least be a $25 each way. Probably a little bit more.
It's more. I think it's maybe about $40.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then I do want to do that. Yeah. So that's nice because the Intercontinental is a beautiful hotel, and it's right on the water, and it's got lovely views. So you could go there and relax and spend a day just relaxing at the hotel, or you could go there and then decide to wander around to the markets or do whatever you want to do, and or you could even rent a car and drive around the island, or there's drivers that will drive you around the island.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Which is a lovely thing to do as well. So, I'm saying this because I believe it. If you want to get on this, you should probably get on it. You're not sure if there's any November rooms available,
There was last week. I don't know right now. I didn't check this week.
And the next, was there dates in December?
There was a December 2nd, which was a 10 night. And then I think there was a December 12th, which is 11 night. But I think there was availability there. So I'd have to check.
Well, it's a super duper way to go, and I'm looking forward to it already. And so you want to call Captivating Journeys at 244-1414. I know I'm bringing it all up because there's lots of other things you could do. And we can mention if you do want to do the Alaska cruises, we're really down to the wire on that because we're into the season where the cruises already started. Are you still getting some people going last minute going, I'd like to go on a cruise to Alaska, or is that already peaked?
No, it's pretty much, people plan for Alaska in advance, sometimes a year in advance. So
wow, that far out.
Yeah.
I know, who's going to go again? Christine Wong.
Again?
She's going to go.
Well, she's always going somewhere.
Yeah, she's going to go on the Inside Passage. Wow. The Inside Package Passage. Uh-huh. But she's going to go in the late August again.
Oh.
Because it's a fun cruise, and it is. You see a lot of wildlife, and that's a lovely one.
I need to do that one again.
And Celebrity's a nice one on that one. Celebrity does a good job on that. Yeah. So again, Captivating Journeys for any of that information. And you can call Captivating Journeys at 244-1414.
Our website is captivatingjourneys.com.
And there's a toll-free number, too?
1-800-344-9086.
And it's a good way to go. Kathy's really great, and Kathy and Tina there really can help you with really anything, the European ones. I know the prices hopefully will come down on Europe by September. So some people like to do the September and October deals because they usually are a little cheaper. You could even get super deals in November usually, too.
Yeah, when the weather's cooler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's not too late for that either. All right. Well, we'll be getting back to you soon.